Well, Pete, I am honored to have you on the podcast today and to dive in a little bit of your story, the unstoppable mindset. Would you just share with us what provoked creating this book? I know there's probably a depth and the layers to this to your story, but ultimately, like what led you to write this book?
I think it's been an organic journey because a lot of people always told me, oh, I should write a book. And it was kind of like, yeah, well, I should do a lot of things, but writing a book ain't one of them. And it got to a point in my journey where when I stepped away from running a Fortune 5 company or running a portion of that, I really felt it on my heart to go and start to help other executives achieve what I had achieved and help them work through things. But it was a secondary level, which I had a passion to help other executives thrive because I had realized in my career, oftentimes I hadn't been able to thrive because I was so fixated on running millions or billions in operations that the wheels started to come off and I started to end up in the weeds, so to speak, on an emotional or relational level. So when I left my position there with a Fortune 5 energy company, I just felt compelled that I'd seen the right way of doing things, and I had often done the wrong way of doing things, and I wanted to go and help other men get it right. And so that was kind of the start of my desire to really start empowering other men because I felt like I'd done the hard work and I'd finally got through the other side. And now is my ability to my passion to go and help other men. And in doing so, I started to really realize the magnitude of broken men that are in the corporate world, the broken men that are in the church. And the more I dug into it, the more I realized, like, oh man, like, obviously I don't have all the answers, but I was like, golly, if I could help men see what I saw, experience what I experienced, and then get to the other side and not end up stuck. Think of the magnitude of change that we could provide for families, for marriages, for communities. Because I'm a firm believer, having gone through my journey, that the brokenness we see in this country is directly correlated to the depletion of strong leaders and men in the family and the home. And when those people aren't there, they don't show up. The family breaks down, the marriage dies, the church dies, the community dies, and the country dies.
When you started to hold this mirror up against yourself, and you're like, man, something's got to change, right? I've read and even talk about quite a bit between the ages of 35 and 45 for men is, we classify it as like midlife crisis, but the reality it's really much larger than that. Like I think God is trying to lead us on this maturation journey in this process. So how old were you when you first started to sense this, like, man, something's got to change. What the man in the mirror is not as God has designed. Like when was that for you?
I think it was one of those journeys where you get to a phase and you're like, oof, this ain't working. And then you change. So it was this series of plateaus. So I would say that post college, I kind of hit like the first plateau where I was like, I need to change. Because I would say before then, I was the boy named Sue. I was fight mad. And then getting into early marriage was kind of, that's where the refining started to take place. And then I would say my wife and I actually hit a point of separation at our 7 year mark. So around 2010, and we were both done. And then I feel like God brought us together in an amazing way. We came back together after a few months. And man, that was like, that's when the grinding wheel came out. And I feel like I went through 4 years of just intense, like, 80 grit sandpaper. And then I would say kind of 2020 is probably when the last phase where I just went deep and I finally felt like I broke through. And it was like that aha moment of like, wow, this is it. This is what life's really supposed to be like.
So I typically have a standard set of questions, but I think we've dived straight into some of the book conversation, and we'll get back to the book in a moment. But let me hit pause and just talk about Pete today. One of my favorite questions to ask is, tell us about the last date that you and your wife went on, and what does that reveal about your leadership in this season right now?
Trying to think. Last date I went on with my wife, we like to go to this local restaurant too. It's a bit of a little pub. We love the we're big on the chicken wings that they got there, so we go and get our greasy food in. But I would say that the number one thing that this season of my life entails is that I read a book. It's called When Adam Loves Eve. It's on Amazon. It's a powerful book written by a Jewish rabbi that really speaks and parallels the instructions that Christ gave us, which is husbands die for your wives like I died for the church. And I would challenge everyone to read that book because it will radically change your marriage, because it instructs in there that Christ died for an undeserving, unrighteous, unruly, bad attitude group of people. And when I read that and I realized that that's how I'm supposed to live my wife, I need to do and die for my wife daily, because one is it forces my ego to die, and two, it makes me the type of man that will do whatever it takes, no matter how my wife acts, no matter what she does, no matter what she says, whether she's in a good mood or a bad mood. It's not my job to treat her conditionally. It's my job to sacrifice unconditionally, which really is to my betterment, because it forces me to put my ego aside. It forces me to take my brokenness and allow it to heal. And it's a tall order for me to live that way. But now it's like, when my wife is in a bad mood, I don't act in accordance to her bad mood. I realize like my job is to love her. Hard stop. If she's in a crappy mood, my job is to love her unconditionally. If I feel like she's offside, my job is to love her unconditionally, because ultimately I'm called to be head of the household, which I think a lot of people misinterpret that. I'm not head of the household as in terms of a hierarchy. I'm head of the household because Christ, or God, gave grace to Christ. Christ gave grace to me as head of the household. And it's my job to reciprocate that and to disseminate that to my family. And that's the only reason I've been put in that place.
That's good. How have you learned to grow in this tension or this polarity of like this idea of like dying to yourself, right, to serve your wife, but still leading in a way that you still pursue your desires, wants, and needs as well, like, right? Because almost to some degree in our Christian culture, like we've become so dying to ourself that we become a nice guy that we don't have any semblance of leadership. So how have you learned to handle that polarity together?
I think that's where the misunderstanding of who Christ was inside the church exists, where we think that Christ was a nice guy and that he was soft and tender and he pet sheep for a living. But I think if you look at the Bible, Christ was a warrior, but his job was to seek the broken. Like, he didn't come to find, the people that had it together. He went to go find, and you can see a lot of times in the Bible, like he sought the women. He went to go find the woman at the well. Like, he went to go find Zacchaeus. And I think a lot of times we miss that, where he was on a mission to go find that woman, and he was on a mission to tell her that he loved her despite the world discarding her, right? And I think when I see that, I realize that like, it's my job to go to any extent to go and sacrifice myself as a warrior for my family. And it's my job to do whatever it takes. And it's my job to sacrifice my own will to stand in the gap and to take the blows of the enemy and to do whatever it takes for the betterment of my family. But when I do so, I have to, you know, I have to yield the sword of truth. I have to wear the armor of God to go into battle, because the enemy is on an attack for my family. The enemy's on attack for my marriage. He's on attack for my mental health. So I really have to assume a warrior stance every day, which is very proactive and very assertive and very, you know, domineering, but it's not on my strength, it's on Christ's strength. And so I think what people don't see is Christ was very loving and very gracious, and he sought the broken, but he was no pushover. And he was very clear in his determination and in his agenda and his mission on earth. And I think as men, it's our job to die to our wives, because most men that I know are wounded, and wounded men are selfish and they are destructive. And then suddenly it's about their needs, their wants, their wounds, rather than the betterment of others. And when you can flip that, so now suddenly I realize I have to heal. I have to become a better version of myself. I have to become the man that God wants me to be. And then I can lead effectively, because now I'm doing so as a warrior and a poet, rather than as some, you know, powerful stallion that's just kicking the hell out of everything.
It's almost like kind of what I'm hearing is really this difference of indecision versus decision. Like, right, just make a decision. It may be a right or wrong decision, but make a decision, and start moving towards your wife, moving towards your family, moving towards at least what you anticipate God is saying for you to do is the next best thing, right? I think we get so paralyzed so many times that we're trying to figure out the next 10 steps versus like the only thing we have is today. So try to take some decisive action today that allows your family to flourish and your wife to flourish as well. Let me pause for a moment, because I don't think on this, the video aspect of this we'll share, but the audio aspect, there for a moment, there was something that welled up inside of you very, very clearly. Could you say more about what was happening in that moment if you want to?
Yeah. No, I think for me, I realized the magnitude of my journey, and when I got it right, how impacting that is, right? It's like when I suddenly operate out of a place of strength rather than a place of desperation, because a wounded man, when I was wounded, I was desperate. I was desperate for validation. I was desperate for success. I was desperate for a sexual identity. And that made me a consumer, not an investor. Therefore, I was on the take rather than standing in front and honoring my wife and protecting my wife. But when I was able to heal and grow, I suddenly had a confidence that I understood who I was and I understand whose I was. And it allowed me to change the trajectory of my marriage and the trajectory of my kids. And I think the thing that wells up inside me sometimes when I talk about this stuff is I realize we have 25% of American homes with no father. We're talking hundreds, or we're talking millions of children that are being thrown to the wolves because we as men didn't step up and we abdicated our responsibility. And it's a sad picture to see how many kids have been destroyed. But it's also a powerful thing when you understand what we have to do to resolve that and to actually create kingdom impact.
That's a good word. So after you and your wife have had a phenomenal date night eating some amazing pub food, what is your preferred style of taking care of your physical wellness?
I'm a gym guy. I've owned several fitness companies. So for me, I love getting outside, hiking, biking, mountain climbing, and going to the gym.
Yeah. So a variety of activities. Is there anything that you lean towards in particular? Like, you're like, that's probably the one I'd choose if I'm waking up tomorrow morning.
Probably mountain biking.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Good deal. All right. So you kind of have shared a little bit of a transformation story and coming to more in alignment and agreement with Christ, leading your life. So in this season right now, when you're out of alignment, one, how do you know, and what do you do that could be helpful for the listeners to get back in alignment?
I think to me, I always try to reverse engineer a situation. So if I'm leading a team, or if I'm trying to do something myself, or I'm trying to help an executive or an athlete or someone, or if I'm even mentoring like a youth, I think the critical piece is always the why. Like, why do you do what you do? And I find, at least for myself, with my experience, I can tell whether someone is being motivated by a servant leadership endeavor, or whether it's an ego-driven endeavor. So it's either is are you doing what you're doing for you, or are you doing what you're doing for the betterment of someone else? And I think a strong man that's operating out of a place of confidence is typically doing something because there's a benefit for others, and it will certainly reciprocate for you. But it's not a sacrificial, it's not a selfish endeavor, so to speak. But if you see someone that's off track, typically there's always a personal benefit to whatever they're doing. It's a validation of some sort, where it's an acquisition, or an accumulation of something or other, whether it's like if they're going to the gym because they just want to look good and feel good. Or do they go to the gym because they want to be healthier for their families? Or are they building a company because secretly they just want more money because more money makes them feel more powerful? Or are they building a business, but the business is the secondary to their family, to their marriage, to their kids?
It's almost not lies, but it's these subtle lies, right, that we begin to believe are these what's called covert contracts that like we kind of hold on to. It's like, but we're the only one that kind of knows about them. But we
Right.
almost do it in this tit for tat relationship. So you're saying for yourself, like being aware of like, am I doing this for my whole heart, or am I expecting something in return, is kind of an is how you figure out like, I'm out of alignment right now in this relationship or relationship with your wife.
Yeah. Like if for instance, I would say like as a quick example would be like if I'm at odds with my wife, I can either take the defensive approach and say, well, she's out of alignment, which ultimately comes down to I just want to be right. Or I can take more of a Christ-centered approach, which is I just want her to know that I love her, and being right or wrong isn't the important part of this situation. So that to me is a quick, canary in the coal mine test of like what's my motivation here.
So when you wrote the Unstoppable Mindset for yourself and clearly for people that you want to serve that read it, it's almost like this idea of life that we have to learn to die to ourselves in order for something to grow for the benefit of other people. So I guess my question is like, can you take us to that moment that you're like that depth of despair that could be helpful to somebody listening that they're like trying to make meaning or sense out of life, their marriage, their work situation. They keep climbing the ladder, they fall. They keep climbing the ladder, they fall. They keep climbing the ladder, they fall. But possibly with your perspective and serving very large corporations, your perspective may be a little bit different or hit a little bit different of when you finally fell that last time off the ladder and you're like, something's got to change.
Right. So I think the thing that I think maybe this makes me unique is I don't look at someone in terms of like what do I see right now? What I do is I try to see what brought them to this place. I try to see the what's underneath the waterline. And for me, I feel like I always fell back, or I always hit that glass ceiling and I could never push through. I did that my whole life until I finally realized what had me stuck. What was the first thing that tipped the scales in my life? And when I suddenly realized what the root cause of my trauma was, what the root cause of my, you know, my emotional health and my instability and my driving force in life, when I realized what the root cause of that was, and I was able to heal that, suddenly it changed everything. And I felt like when I had the, once I, as long as I tried to build the house on a broken foundation, I was constantly readjusting and shimming and having to tear down and build back up, but it was all for naught. And I think that that's with any man, any leader, any husband, when that foundation is broken and you don't realize it's broken or you've never gone back to fix it, you can put the fanciest chandelier up, but it's trivial.
Could you talk more about some of these root causes that you're seeing in men and maybe a process and protocols to begin how to, like, how do you even begin to heal these places that, that you're like, I don't like this shadow. Right. But how do you really discern, like, oh, these are common in men and common with the people that you're serving?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I've seen in my journey and what I've seen in most men's journey is it's not the things that happen later on in life. They're typically just the sequence of events. It's the domino chain. But if I look at most men, I can probably take you to a place where they were 3, 5, 7, where their superhero, which was their dad, failed to empower them, whether it was, you know, verbally, emotionally, spiritually. When you're in those formative years, your superhero is all that matters to you. You don't care about your toys. You don't care about food. You don't care about candy. You care about your superhero picking you up, hugging you, loving you, and telling you that you're the most important thing in his life. And I think most men, that when that didn't happen, it started a series of events that led to catastrophic failure. And a lot of us grow up and we're like, oh, I'm 40 years old. It's no big deal. It's a thing of the past. But what men fail to realize is that little boy is still inside you. That wound is still there. That belief that you used, that you assumed in your formative years, is now the lens that you look through every day. And now you're still looking through the eyes of a four-year-old that was told, dad's too busy to see you. Therefore, you don't matter. Therefore, you're not lovable. Therefore, you better figure out life because it's up to you. That little boy is going to be 40 years old and hitting a wall wondering what's life all about, because this is empty.
And so what did you do and to begin the next phase of healing those parts of you? And what can other men begin to do to heal those parts?
I think the first thing I had to do is actually realize that that's where it all came from. It was kind of the aha moment where I was like, okay, I'm not the bad person that my parents said I was in my teens. I wasn't, you know, the struggling father and husband in my 40s. I'm actually a sum of the experiences that I went through starting at 2, 3, 4, 5. And when I started to realize that that's where I was stuck, and that's where the breaking down of who I was as a person, the desperation for validation, that's where it all started. And for every man, it's different, right? Some dads are abusive. Some dads are negligent. Some dads just don't know better. Some dads are working too much. Some dads are divorced and gone. Some, like, everyone's got a different reason why dad wasn't there to protect and to validate and to hug and to cherish. But most of us men have a story that resembles that. And then we went on a journey to, one, to hide the fact that we didn't feel loved. And then the other one was we went to go do something to compensate for that emptiness. Now we try to find some exterior representation of success. And that became our identity. And for me, when I started to realize this story, I was able to finally start to understand who I was. And I had to go back and I had to start to love myself. I had to start to love myself for who I was, rather than the old way, which was I was on a treadmill hoping that the next situation would finally make me feel like I was someone worth loving and I could finally love myself. But that's just the bottomless pit.
So with your book and where you're at now in life, what is God stirring in you? What's next?
I think the number one passion I have now is, and part of the reason I wrote the book is because I realized I can only coach so many men. I can only touch the lives of so many people. And I think we have a massive crisis in this country where we've got 25% of homes without a father. We've got probably 50 more percent of homes where the father is absentee emotionally. So they're not active, present, or engaged. So we have 60, 70% of homes where these children are being raised without someone to love and invest into them. And a mom is more of a nurturer and a coddler, and a man is more like he gives children purpose and passion and inspiration. And when kids grow up missing that part of the equation, it does devastate them and permanently devastates them until they learn where it came from and how to heal. And I think for me, if I can help inside the church, outside the church, in the boardroom, on the football field, if I can help men realize why they're stuck, what it's going to take, and how healing requires you to face it head on and not to pretend or diminish it or minimize it, but to say, listen, I went through some tough things, and I'm not, and I think too, men sometimes tough it out, right? They're like, well, my dad didn't beat me with a stick, therefore I was fine. Well, if dad was an alcoholic and dad was divorced to mom and dad was gone, that made your five-year-old think that, guess what? Dad didn't love you anymore. Dad didn't care anymore. Dad was gone. He had other things that were priorities. Therefore, you don't matter. And it can seem minimal, but it was significant to that little boy. And when, as a grown man, I want to help other men realize, like, I'm 6'6 and 270. Like, I'm not a wimp, but until I healed, I was truly a wimp. Because I was broken and I was manifesting strength through exterior, you know, features and facets and looking for worldly success. But I truly was a wounded man that was destructive. And I just pray and hope that I can reach enough men and speak into enough lives that they can realize the divorce that they're heading towards isn't because their wife, it's because they fail to nurture and invest and sacrifice and do whatever it takes for their wife. Instead, they're trying to play tough and they're like, well, my wife better do X, Y, Z or else. Or they're not showing up for the kids. They're too busy with other things. But if most men were to pull down the veil of protection and realize, like, I'm hurting and I'm stuck, I need help. If we can change the world, if we can change that life, we can change 10 lives. If we can change 10 lives, we can change millions. And so the goal that I have, that I feel like God's put on my heart, is I just want to be someone that can say, hey, I'm a big dude, I'm a tough dude, but I was weak and I was broken. And if I can say it, so can you. And if I can heal, so can you.
That's a good word. Where can people find you, find the book?
Well, anyone can come and find me or follow me online on LinkedIn or Instagram or TikTok, but my book's on Amazon. So I'd love it if, you know, I'd love it if people could grab it and change the trajectory of their life and realize that God's the source of your grace and your healing and your future.
So for the man listening, as most men want, just a 1-2-3 playbook.
Right.
What's the 1-2-3 that you would leave the man, the husband, the father, the son, listening right now?
Well, the beauty is that the book is actually, it's a playbook. It's A to Z. So it's designed to be a field manual, like here's your routes, go run them. But I think for any man listening is, one is stop playing tough and just realize that something broke inside you long ago. And you got to go identify what that is. And then you have to realize that was the deciding, that was the fork in the road that made you not love yourself. And you're stuck today because you don't love yourself. The only way to move ahead is for you to go back and heal and then to love yourself. Because when I don't love myself, I can pretend I love my wife, but it's crap. Like, I don't have, so therefore I can't give. So I think for any man listening is you have to stop playing tough, go back, learn to love yourself, and then realize that when you love yourself, now you can invest in others because you've got, like Christ says, you've got overflow. And when you have overflow, then I can invest into you. But if my jar is dry, there's nothing I can do to help you. And we get on airlines every day that says, put your mask on first so that you can help others. And as men, we have to heal first so that we can be a leader when we can inspire and empower others.
Well, Pete, thank you for your time today. One last question. Fast forward down the road, a year, 3 years, we circle back. Maybe we see each other in the airport or something. Who do you want to say that you've become? And what in particular, what does that story sound like for you?
Are you asking who do I want to become in terms of what person or what type of person?
Yeah, the type of person. Who are you growing into in the next season? Yeah.
I think that the person that I want to become is the person that I always wished had been there for me. And I think that inspires me that every day I want to be there for others. And I want to be the people that are the ones that are like, that time I had it tough, that time I couldn't get it out of the situation, that time I had no hope, Pete showed up. And whether I showed up on an online post or whether I showed up in a book or whether I showed up physically, I really pray that I can be that person that was like, when times got tough, Pete showed up for me. And that's what drives me, because there's so many times in life I was like, man, if someone would just stop and help me, if someone just would stop long enough and care, you know, that'd be all I'd ask for right now.